Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, it's a twofer show, two guests. Our first guest is Jill Courtney. She's a member of the AES, the Audio Engineering Society, and Jill has some important things to say about women in audio recording and mixing. And David Bialik is with us talking about what's coming up at the next AES convention in New York. That's all coming up on TWIRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, saving, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twirt. And by the Telos Alliance, shaping the future of audio, inspiring you to create the most exciting and engaging audio experiences imaginable. Visit telosalliance.com/opt-in.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. So delighted that you're here. We do the show every week. We talk about radio technology, everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and all the stuff in between. And we try to talk about people in the business, too. And that's what we're going to focus on, at least for the first half of our show, is people in the business, especially the 50% of people who often aren't properly represented with 50% of the jobs. So we'll be talking about that here coming up in just a few minutes with our special guest. Well, I'll tell you who she is in just a minute. Okay, hang on. Yeah, we got a great guest. Chris Tobin is with us. I'm in my usual hangout here in Nashville, Tennessee, but Chris Tobin's with us from a special location. Where in the world and how are you, Chris?
I'm well, and I'm in the Catskills of New York State in the mountains, out camping this weekend and then hiking, rafting tomorrow, and having a good time. That's the plan. This is also the site where I install that Wi-Fi network, so I'm actually on the Wi-Fi network via 5 different radio hops. So let's see how this holds up.
Right. Well, during testing, it wasn't always perfect, but it's great at the moment. So don't move. Just kind of stay there.
Oh, yeah. No. I made some changes. Since I know the ins and outs, I moved around a few things. But the season is closed for the guys up here. So this is the last of 5 camps that are up and running. So everything else has been shut down. So hopefully you'll have all the bandwidth I need at the moment.
So you're not contending right now with a bunch of Boy Scouts watching Netflix?
Nope. Actually, it's about 3 other people. That's it. The entire 12,000 acres is quiet.
That's awesome. Now, when we say camping, are you camping or are you really kind of glamping?
No. I can assure you, the cabin I have is concrete floor. The bed is made of wood, and it's not something comfortable. There are no springs. There's no box spring. It's just a plastic-covered mattress. Yes. There is a kitchen area. There is gas, and there's a stove, and there's a refrigerator. That's about it. Everything else, you're roughing it. And there's a bathroom, yes. But trust me, it's not glamoring, not at all. But it's good stuff. I mean, I spent the afternoon watching dragonflies go by. I'm taking pictures and practicing some photography. I'm like, ooh, this is a good shot. And then all of a sudden, as I'm sitting at this picnic table, a table outside the cabin, a bird lands next to me, and it's a pheasant. I'm like, oh, look at that. Not something you see every day. So it's really good.
You mentioned pheasant. This morning out in front of my house, there's turkeys in our neighborhood, about 20 turkeys in the neighborhood. Occasionally you'll see a good 15 or 18 of them together. More often you see 3, 4, 5 of them together. This morning I saw an albino turkey, a hen.
Wow.
Yeah. Not completely white, but mostly white and a little bit of brown. But I'm assuming that's an albino. I mean, all its siblings – and I'm assuming they're all siblings. All the siblings are regular turkey looking, dark brown, a little bit of white here and there, mostly dark brown and black. But this one is almost all white. So strange looking.
Nice. Wow.
All right. Hey, let's introduce our guest real quick because we got to take our first commercial break quickly. Welcome in to see us. I've known this lady on Facebook on the AES Nashville chapter page for a long time. And we've talked a little bit on chat, but now we get to bring her in on the show. Jill Courtney, welcome in. Jill, how are you?
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me on.
I'm delighted to have you here. Yeah. I'm great. And you're a pretty frequent contributor to the AES Nashville Facebook page, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I try to remain active on social media. Definitely.
I like
helping, either with articles or occasionally a job posting or something like that can help out the community.
Well, we want to find out a lot about what you've done, what got you here, and how you got started with the Audio Engineering Society in New York City, I think you said it was. So we're going to hear about that and kind of what your focus is. You've got a real passion for something about equity, and I want to hear all about that coming up in just a minute, okay? Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, episode 410, is brought to you by our friends at Lavvo. Stick around. We got more from Jill Cortey coming right up.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavvo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while, so why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavvo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavvo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavvo radio tech at www.lavvo.com/twert.
And if you go to that special web URL, lavvo.com/twert, it'll take you right to the radio console area. Plus, they'll know that we sent you there, so that'll really help us out. So thanks very much. It's episode 410 of This Week in Radio Tech. Kirk Harnack, Chris Tobin, he's in the Catskills in New York. Oh, my goodness. And our guest, Jill Cortney. And we've got actually two guests on today, so we've only got half the time with each of them. So, Jill, let's just jump right into it. Tell us a little bit about Jill Cortney and AES and why were you in New York and that kind of thing, and then we'll get to your passionate topic today.
Okay, sure. Once again, thanks for having me. I started in New York with AES, and I had been a singer-songwriter in New York City and a performer for many, many years. And I had taken a couple of music tech courses here and there. I always had an aptitude for it and very much an interest in it. And I think at one point I was collaborating with someone who had a little bit more control than I was comfortable with. And so I decided to go to school for it. I went back for my master's at New York University. And at the time, right when we started our program at New York University, it was right around 9/11. And so it was a very interesting time, of course. But they said, hey, you should join AES. And they kind of introduced it to us in one of our original classes. And I joined, but I didn't get involved very much at first. I really got involved when I finally moved to Nashville. So I'm pretty heavily involved, or I have been, with the Nashville chapter. With the New York chapter, I didn't get that involved. I was in school the majority of the time, so it wasn't something that was a huge priority at the time.
So what has been taking up your time here in Nashville in the music biz? I know you teach also, because we all have to make a living. We have our passion and we have our living. And I mean, hey, if I could do Twerk 24 hours, that'd be great. But, you know, I'm blessed to work for the folks at Telos full time. How's been your involvement in music recording and making music and so forth?
Well, I started a company in New York City called Sharkbait Studios. It was a partnership. And I moved that in 2005. Once I graduated from my grad school, I moved that here to Nashville. And at the time, Nashville was way more affordable, especially in contrast to coming from New York City. So in 2005, I landed here. And with my partner, we opened Sharkbait Studios. It was a commercially run audio and video recording facility. And so that took over my life. At the same time, I started teaching audio at the university level. And so my first gig was at Tennessee State University here in Nashville. And they had me teach audio classes, beginning and advanced. And then, of course, I was also there, a commercial music, like voice teacher as well, because I do both. Mm. And so, so that kind of launched me here in Nashville. And it also got me involved in when I was teaching at the Art Institute of Tennessee, Nashville. They had a brand new audio program, and I was an adjunct over there eventually. And they were starting an AES chapter. They were starting a student chapter, and they needed a representative. And I had been going to AES for years off and on, but I wasn't heavily involved. I would go periodically, particularly if the topics of conversation were something that was fascinating to me. But when I started the student chapter, I was the representative. And so I would go to the planning committee meetings, and we would plan different events for the Nashville chapter. And then I would take that back to the Art Institute and report back and start a student chapter over there. So that was kind of a pleasure to be able to launch that. And then after that, I was on the committee. I stayed on the committee even past my tenure at the Art Institute. And I became a full committee member, helping plan and volunteer. And I've been quite active with it, actually. So
maybe you can so many things I'm curious about. And one of them has to do with music recording and mixing, which I know you've done plenty of, and you've been on the performing side too. But relating making a mix to broadcasting of that mix. And of course, up until 10, 15 years ago, almost all mixing was done with the idea that it would be broadcast, right? And, right. And Chris Tobin, feel welcome to jump in on this too, because Chris does field mixing more for talk segments, but he also does music segments as well. He works he's the director of engineering at a jazz station in Newark, New Jersey. And so they do plenty of live stuff too. So I'm curious about when you're mixing music, when you're recording music and doing a mix, what, if any, regard is paid to, or thought is paid to, this is going to be broadcast. This is probably going to go through some audio processing. Is there any thought about that? Or you just make the best mix that you can right there for listening off whatever medium it is that you're recording on? In other words, is there any thought to the fact that this is going to be broadcast?
Is this a question for me?
Josh, is that ever talked about? Hey, this is going to be broadcast. Maybe we should listen on it through an older Optimod. Maybe we should get a hold of some broadcast processor and squash this up pretty good. See what it sounds like.
I honestly have never taken that into consideration, because a lot of times, especially now in broadcast, things are going to be compressed anyway. So to me, it's all about just getting the best mix possible to my ears and within the environment that I'm in. I'm either doing a live recording, like a concert recording or something like that, or a studio recording, which is obviously a more controlled environment. Or then, of course, I do audio for video stuff, like live capture for that. So none of it really is, I don't think that there's any difference for me as far as like, oh, this is going to be broadcast, because at the end of the day, we have to go through a whole lot of steps before it even gets to that point.
I figured that would probably be the answer, especially nowadays, since when any recording that you make, it could go out over all kinds of different transport media, right? Could be broadcast on AM or FM radio, could be streamed. It could be downloaded as a podcast or as a recording. Could be, of course, go on a CD, like an old fashioned CD. Chris Tobin, you got any thoughts about this this notion of thinking about the medium when you're doing the mix?
I know I don't do that. I just go for the best recording and recreate what we're hearing in the studio or on stage if it's a live event. And then what happens downstream, we just give the best quality. So if it goes through any compression, what do you call it? Bit reduced audio compression, and we know at least they got the best bits going in. If it's audio, FM, digital, or analog, again, it's the best quality going into the processing, whether it's an Optimod, an Omnia, or any of them, actually. No, if anything, the worst thing you can do is try and mix for EQ for a particular medium or media, because that'll just ruin everything. Just stick to producing, recording, creating the magic, if you will, of the sonics, of the auditory excitement, and then go from there.
It does seem like back in the 50s and 60s and maybe in part of the 70s, records tended to be mixed or at least mastered with the idea that they were going on AM radio. And of course, records that were going to be actually pressed to vinyl, actual records, you had to pretty well sum the deep bass notes because you didn't want to get bass excursions too far left or right that wouldn't print well on the vinyl,
right,
and couldn't be handled by the stylus picking it up or even by the stylus scratching it out. So that was obviously a limitation in the medium that you had to account for in the mastering process. So we've covered that pretty good. So let's run into Jill's topic here that we really wanted to talk about. Jill, on this show, 90%+, probably 98% of our guests have been guys. And that's because there are lots of guys in broadcast engineering. I don't consider myself sexist, but I realize some of the things that I have done or have to do as a broadcast engineer. I don't know that I want my daughter doing that, but am I thinking about that wrong? Of course, I wouldn't want to stop her if that's what she wants to do. Great, I'll help you all I can. But I'm thinking, oh, sweetheart, you're so fair, you're so nice. Don't get into this. So, tell me where you come at from this whole idea of equity in the STEM or STEAM areas of education and work.
Well, I mean, first, I know I'm an oddball, but I've always been really super tech and mechanically inclined and musically inclined, and so for me, it was a really authentic choice to go into audio. I didn't know that I was going to be a minority. I was in a classroom at NYU, and there were maybe two or three other girls that I'd see throughout the program, maybe four. I knew all of them, of course, because we immediately were like, oh my gosh, we're surrounded by guys. But I didn't really realize that it was such a discrepancy at the beginning. And then it, became quite obvious to me. And then, of course, moving from New York City, where there were more women, to the South in Nashville, I remember going to one of my first AES meetings, and I was with my business partner, who is a man. And so that I knew one person, and that made me comfortable. But as I looked around the room, I remember seeing a few other females, and I would always go up to them because I'm like, oh my gosh, there's another one. That's amazing. And, as I realized that I was a minority, and inevitably it would be like the wife of somebody or, one woman who was heavily involved, was more of like, she does equipment dealing, like she deals with in equipment and rentals and stuff like that. So she is involved that way, but she was not an audio engineer. So I was kind of hard pressed to find many more. And so I kind of went on this quest, and I found a few in Nashville, and I found more outside of Nashville, and I decided to interview them. And so for me, I think it was just kind of a quest for a mentor that looked like me and some people who might be able to relate to this solitary way of being, because it's, but at the same time, I have amazing men who are my mentors as well. And that's been a fantastic experience for me too. So it, I feel like there's benefits and there's downfalls of being, you know, one of the only ones.
So I want to ask you about something a bit more technical as it relates to men and women. Now, in broadcast engineering, we had traditionally been told, and I still believe it, that if you adjust the audio processing on a radio station, and it's kind of harsh. I mean, you're going for loudness, and so you're really into the clipper. And this applies maybe more to technology of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and less a bit less so today with some of the modern audio processors we have now. But the idea was, if your audience was predominantly male, if that was your target audience for a radio station, you could clip a little harder, you could get a little more grunge in there, and the guys wouldn't mind it. But if you're running a Mix 92.9 here in Nashville, you know, if you're going after long-term listening, especially female long-term listening, you did not want to do any more clipping than you absolutely had to make yourself print on the radio. That women were more sensitive to that kind of clipping, and they would tune away, and they wouldn't quite know why. They just found it irritating. What I'm talking about really is differences in listening and audio perception and willingness to put up with a certain sound. Have you ever found that to be the case yourself? Differences in men and women as you're mixing or mastering audio?
Well, I will be the first to let you know I've never been a man, so it's hard for me to compare ears. But I've heard that we have more sensitive ears. I am that nerd in the back of the club that is wearing earplugs at all times. So for me, you know, my ears are my moneymaker. And so I protect them like a total dork. And I have no shame in my game with that. But, you know, for me, I am extremely sensitive to clipping and to any sort of distortion. So it is an irritant to me. It is something that would make me walk out. There's bad sound, especially in Nashville, it's like almost, you know, an offensive thing. It's like, you're in Nashville. You're like, what? You're in Music City. Like, this should be the best, you know, but yeah, I don't know that there is a difference. Like I said, I don't have anything to compare it to, but I do know that there are some things. You know, I think more irritating than anything is that on the radio, you don't have equal representation. So, for instance, I could listen to bro country all day long, except for, you know, sometimes I want to hear a female voice. I love female singers and I want to hear their perspective. And so, you know, you can only hear about pickup trucks and cutoff jeans so much.
I know. It's a sickness we have right now in there's plenty of pushback against bro country.
Yeah. You know. So my point is, I don't know that it's the clipping per se. I think it might be the topic.
Yeah. I can put up with about one bro country song, and that's about it. After that, I gotta go. But and actually, for years, I, as a disc jockey on there, I felt the same way about bluegrass. I could put up with one bluegrass song, and after that, that was enough. That's all I needed to hear for a while. But now I seem to have a better appreciation for it. I don't know if I'll ever get a better appreciation for bro country. So, where do you go? What do you think is the best thing that members of the AES or people like me who have a bit of a public face in this area, or like Chris Tobin, what can we do to make, I mean, I guess I'm worried about stifling a female who wants to get into engineering or audio and not even realize that I'm doing it because it's just part of the culture or things that we say. You know, I have no intent to stop somebody or discourage somebody. I want to encourage anybody, regardless of sex, to, if they're interested in the business, let me help you out. But what do you think are things that we should be careful of to accidentally not, you know, make people feel invited?
I know this is such a sticky subject, and you know, I have no problems with it, obviously. You know, I'm the first one to post something about gender equity, even though it's to a forum with 90% men. So I don't really, you know, I don't mind having these tricky conversations. I think first off, you know, there are a lot of things you can do. And look, you're having me online right now. You're doing your part. You're like diversifying. It's not just females. It's also minorities. And it depends on where, you know, where we're located. In Nashville, it is very white male centric. It just is in general in our business. But here it is specifically so. And I think one thing that you might be able to do is just, you know, encourage females, like bring them into the fold. Like, I think a lot of times we are doubted, like our abilities are doubted. And that's weird to me, because there's nothing that says that, you know, you have to have a penis in order to do a job. So except for maybe peeing standing up. Other than that,
which is helpful at some outdoor concerts. Yes.
Yeah. Other than that, like everything else, you know, it seems to be like kind of an equal playing field. And so I think just by being inclusive and being open-minded, and, you know, also the one thing that I always wish would happen that is actually starting to happen, and I've just seen it really this year, is when other men, you know, troll, or when other men are being bullying, which is overt sometimes, especially online, you know, it's hard for a female to then, you know, rage against the machine, if you will. I have no issue with it. But it's hard, because then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get the reputation for being a difficult woman. I'm going to be the, you know, this like feminazi that everybody, you know, I don't want that reputation. Like I didn't bring this situation to light. I'm just kind of in it. So I think, you know, if we all can just kind of stick up for each other, I mean, my gosh, if someone said, you know, every guy over 60 who's white, we need to discriminate against, I would be the first one to say, like, that's not right. So, you know, I feel like we all just need to stick up for each other and, you know, honor each other and not objectify each other and not, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's pretty basic. I don't think that we need anything else other than, you know, opportunities of employment. Equal pay would be nice. For equal effort, these kinds of things, you know, that we're still fighting for. I mean, I'm 43, and I've seen in numerous locations that I've worked that my colleagues make more money. I've seen people who are less skilled than I and less experienced than I get full-time jobs where I did not, primarily either because they're a man or a man with a family to support. And, you know, I have two cats that I've got to feed. So, I mean, but I, you know, still it's one of those things that I feel like, you know, I just want opportunities to be there, and whatever I can do to help solidify this, you know, and to just kind of make it inclusive, I will, you know, whether it be inclusive with white guys, inclusive with women, inclusive with minorities. I mean, we're all in this together, sink or swim. You know, this is a tough business, but we can learn a lot from each other. So I don't know.
Chris, I'm guessing you work at a workplace that's, you know, that probably makes an effort to be pretty darn inclusive, public radio in Newark. What are your thoughts on what Jill's been talking about?
Oh, I've worked with several women, audio engineers, and have a great time with them. I've always been of the mindset, the skills and talents come from the individual who perseveres. I mean, society has its wacky labels for everything, whether you're either a woman or a man. You know, in this business, talent is what your experience. You know, I work with, one of our staffers works with me. She's a woman, shoots video with me, records audio, edits audio, is producing one of the radio programs. So, you know, she's doing very well. You know, I think Jill's right. You need to be the individual and go for it. And yes, there are obstacles. I mean, there were obstacles for me when I started out way back when. And trust me, it wasn't easy for someone who didn't have any background in any of this stuff, working with people that were twice my age and looked at me like, yeah, okay, you're going to take my job. So I'm going to do everything I can to make it difficult for you. And they did. Trust me, they did. And if I was a woman, I'm sure it would have been almost impossible. But things have changed considerably these days, and I believe opportunity does present itself. And to Jill's point, you need to just push forward and keep going and be, you know, smart about yourself. And, you know, learning this stuff and doing these things, it's not that difficult. You'd be surprised at the things you can find out. I mean, I didn't have the internet when I started out. It was the Encyclopedia Britannica and Hard School of Hard Knocks.
That's right. And Jill, you mentioned some online, let's say, ruffian behavior. I almost sometimes I wish we could do away with that medium for chat, because people are so rude there online when they think they can just say something. And I think sometimes people say things that they really didn't even mean. Like you said, okay, this is a place where I can test anything I want to try to say, even if I don't really believe it. I'm just testing the boundaries. It's almost like a 2 or 3 year old checking all the boundaries. And believe me, we had a 2 or 3 year old here pretty recently. He's 8 now. So he's not checking quite as many boundaries. But I guess what I'm getting at is it's so easy to be genuinely offended by what people, the crap people put out online. And that's why I'm saying, probably best to stay away from that, and not use that as a yardstick. But I'm sure that's not your only measure.
It isn't. And honestly, you know, any female that is in this business for any length of time, that is the least of our concerns, to be honest. I mean, someone online, a troll, you know, to me, it's almost a gift, because you're like, oh, okay, well, that's not someone I'm going to hire. That's not someone I'm going to recommend when I have a client who's looking for a bigger studio. I'm not going to send them to that person. So, you know, to me, there's good and bad with that. They reveal who they are through that. And I have no problem taking notes.
You know, that's one of the good things about easy free communication is you find out who is a jerk, and that person loses business just because it used to be we could be a jerk and kind of keep that amongst our bro friends or whatever. And now you do that and it gets out and people find out about it. And yeah. So, yeah. Hey, you know, we got to wrap this up pretty quick. You know, you sent me a link to a video on YouTube. Would you like me to post that in the show notes as part of your story here?
I mean, you're welcome to. Sure.
Okay. Absolutely. I think you, I guess you wrote that copy and read it, right?
Yeah. That was guess. That was for grad school.
Okay. It seemed like this is a pretty good project here. I bet she's doing this for a reason. So I'm going to link that in the show notes. Folks, you're watching this show with Jill Courtney. I will put in the show notes a link to a YouTube video where she kind of really describes the struggle, her ups and downs, and where she would like things to go and how things can be better for equity in the audio and sciences world for men and women. So, Jill, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Jill, you know what's coming up next? We've got a quick sponsor message. And then Jonathan Weiner from AES is going to join us. He's actually in Japan. And I said, dude, would you record me a little, just a little encouragement to come to AES in New York? He said, gladly, I'll do it. So he sent it overnight last night, and we're going to have that. It's just a minute long. And then David Bialik is going to be with us right after Jonathan. And David and I are talking about the AES sessions and the special interesting sessions that are coming up. So it's pretty cool. So once again, Jill, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you being here, and I hope to have you back again sometime. Okay.
Absolutely. Anytime. Right. Thank you so much.
All right. Hey, Chris Tobin and I will continue in the next few minutes. We're going to hear from the folks at Telus, and we'll keep moving along on This Week in Radio Tech.
More top radio stations choose Omnia than all other competing processors combined. Now meet the Omnia Volt, sharing lineage with Omnia processors like the Omnia 11, electrifying, competitive, market-leading audio in a compact one-rack unit package. With Omnia Heritage built in, the Omnia Volt includes Dynamics Magic from Omnia chief algorithm designer Cornelius Gould, including 6 AGC sections from start to finish, deep bass, warmth, and stereo enhancers, 5-band time-aligned limiter, the world's best presets to get you started right, and spectrally pristine final processing designed by Frank Foti.
OmniVault users love its Quick Tweak feature. Quick Tweak distills years of processing knowledge and proven approaches into simple controls that turn you into a processing pro. Nail your signature sound in minutes using advanced presets or your own settings right from the Vault's front panel or a PC. OmniVault brings charisma to your station's audio. FM translators and low-power FM stand out among the crowd. AM stations maximize clarity and coverage. Digital broadcasts sound clear and musical without fatiguing artifacts. Smart design, clearly visible outside and inside. Input and output connections in analog, AES-3, Livewire, and multiplex for FM. Automatic input selection handles redundant STLs. Remote control works with today's browsers, tablets, and smartphones. Idealized patch point for external watermarking. And hardened construction to withstand lightning strikes, surges, high RF fields, and harsh conditions.
The new OmniVault is stunning. Everyone will know you've got an Omnia on your station.
OmniVault is versatile, too. DSP Core firmware alters the personality of Volt to fit your changing needs. FM, AM, digital transmission, or studio processing. Volt can even be used as a standalone stereo generator. DSP cores aren't extra cost add-ons. Download the functionality you need for free. The OmniVault, Omnia audio processing for any station, and a smart upgrade for aspiring broadcasters. Proven audio processing that'll leave your competitors in the dust.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Weiner with the AES, and I'm here to invite you to join me at the Audio Engineering Society, October 17, 18, 19, and 20 in New York City at the Jacob Javits Center. I'm in Japan right now about to give some presentations because we're working to make audio better, awesome, all over the world. This October, we're going to have an incredible convention. It is going to be diverse, led by a bunch of experts talking about subjects that range from product development to broadcast and delivery to building your own stuff, audio education, forensics, restoration, machine learning, really the four corners of the audio universe. And the Audio Engineering Society convention is really the best place for you to go and network with your peers, learn new skills, and move forward in your interest and careers in audio. So I really hope that you'll join me, and I look forward to seeing you in New York City in October at the Jacob Javits Center.
And we're back on This Week in Radio Tech. Kirk Harnack here on this episode where we're talking about the Audio Engineering Society and their convention going on in New York City. And as usual for these, we have the guy who's in charge of all the broadcast sessions at AES. It's David Bialik. Welcome in, David. How are you?
Thank you, Kirk. And it's broadcast and online delivery now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's good because that's how we treat our show This Week in Radio Tech. We talk about, you know, the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between, including all the digital stuff, because that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing, and it's only going to get bigger. So cool. Online and digital. Say that again. Audio and
broadcast and online delivery.
Okay.
Because they wanted to call it broadcast and streaming, and I said I refuse to be the chairman of BS.
Okay. Well, and with that, David, hey, I'm going to see you there. In fact, we're going to try to do a torch show live from New York on the Thursday during the AES. So I'm looking forward to that. Maybe you can join us for that for a few minutes as our guest.
We
might be the AES. We might be at some watering hole, though.
Well, we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to bring it to any heights this year, but that's besides the point.
So I want to ask you a really basic question. Most of the listeners and viewers of this show are broadcast engineers, the vast majority radio. We got a few TV people and some streaming people. And I was wondering, why should a broadcast engineer you're probably already a member of the SBE, or maybe not. You might be a member of SMPTE if you're in television. Why should you join the AES? What's it got for an engineer like you or me?
Okay, first off, the AES show is a lot different than the NAB. Number one, our sessions are teaching technology and techniques. We're not doing sales presentations. There are presentations going on for sales, but when we have the technical program, which I'm in charge of for broadcasts, we are actually talking about the technology we're teaching, And I don't care if product A is better than product B. We're talking about how to use it instead of why you should buy this. And we're not talking price at all either.
Now, you're in charge of this broadcast and online delivery track of sessions, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But there are a myriad of other sessions available, too, and some of them are hugely attended, especially gaming and I guess, audio for video, things like that. What are some of the biggest attractions at AES?
Okay, we have so many different sessions. There's stuff for gaming. There's stuff for audio for cinema. There's historical, which I also happen to like. Oh. Networked audio. There's design for audio equipment builders, psychoacoustics, applications in audio, archiving, education, recording studio, and then there's student stuff, and there's special events, and there's sound reinforcement. It's a whole potpourri.
So I want to ask you about the science before we get into the sessions. We'll get to them here in a second. I was thinking about this, just the science of audio. And, you know, for decades, scientists and engineers and inventors made significant strides in progress in getting audio to be better and better and better. And you know, maybe people like me all along the way for decades thought, well, this is as good as it gets. I mean, 15 inches per second reel-to-reel tape, nothing could be better than that as far as audio reproduction.
And then we brought MP3 and said, hey, let's use it for music.
Yeah, exactly. So my question is, are there still strides being made in audio quality?
Absolutely. Okay. There's strides in audio quality. There's strides in digital compression. I mean, for streaming alone, people are working on HLS and AAC and all different codecs and audio quality. I mean, audio is only getting better, and audio processing is getting better. Sometimes, and let's face it, it's a whole new game with digital, because we had analog really great, and then we brought digital, and we basically set the bar really low and started going up again.
Well, yeah, I hear you. And that's a whole topic there about, you know, digital audio quality being low because we had low bit rates for the last mile delivery or even the middle of the internet delivery. And, you know, now things are getting better. But anyway, I digress. I just wonder if there were strides being made.
And you also have new forms of media that's happening now, like in television. A lot of strides are being made in over the top television.
Yeah.
And, That's definitely a big thing. Podcasts for audio and for video, or for audio video with audio.
And that brings up a good point about podcasts. You know, you and I have both heard plenty of podcasts that are produced by people who know what they're doing with audio, and they sound great. And our delivery methods are such that they still sound great being delivered to your phone or your iPod or your computer. But there are still podcasts out there that sound terrible. And I guess my point is this. It doesn't cost very much to sound great. The tools are out there. Inexpensive tools are out there. But you got to know how to use them. And it isn't that hard. But this is a great – the AES is a great place for young engineers or inexperienced engineers to find out, what am I doing wrong? How can I make this sound really good? What is good sound? What isn't good sound? Is that what people can learn who might be making their first trek to AES?
That's definitely – I like – when that question comes up, I like to think of a conversation I was having with Bob Orban and Frank Foti, and Frank went and quoted Bob and said, hey, we only make the guns. How you shoot it is not the problem. Is the problem.
That's right. What you aim at, or yeah, don't point it at yourself. So let's look at these sessions. I know you've been kind enough to ask me to moderate a session on audio over IP, but let's hear what some of the highlights are of the broadcast and what'd you call it?
Online delivery.
Online delivery sessions. All right, let's go.
Well, we're going to have a session on building a modern broadcast facility in a 150-year-old building. John Stork, the man who designed the Electric Lady and so forth, is working on building a totally digital radio station up in Woodstock, New York. And as a matter of fact, the station is going to be solar. And he's building this AM radio station out there I can't remember the call letters, but he's going to go over everything he's doing from building the facility and so forth and making it totally sustainable, which wow. I find that really interesting. And he's bringing in the whole crew from the people that are financing it to the people that are designing it to people wiring it. They're going to basically take you through the whole trip of building the radio station. So that's going to be a really neat session.
All right, cool.
Then you have Rob Byers from American Public Radio. He's basically going to be talking about podcast production because, as you said, some podcasts sound great, some podcasts don't. And he and I are working together to actually set up a recommendation for loudness as well for podcasts.
Okay.
Because they're all over the place. We have understanding audio for ATSC 3.0. That's going to be really important.
You know what? If an engineer wants to make his mark and be and have a saleable skill, understand this. Because ATSC 3 is coming. It's amazing. So much technical possibility. I mean, it's what ATSC probably 1 should have been or 2 or whatever we got now. It's what it should have been. And it's going to be amazing, but I bet a lot of people don't know what needs to be known about audio for that. So great way to get yourself educated.
Correct. Yeah. And also we have this guy, Kirk Harnack, who's going to be putting together this session for understanding audio over IP. You're going to say, hey, that's an old topic, but guess what? A lot of stuff has changed. Why don't you talk about that?
A lot of stuff has changed, and there's plenty of people that I meet who still really don't understand how it works. And they may have played with it some, they may have even done an installation, but they're not really sure of why what they did worked or why what they're trying here or there doesn't work. And the fundamentals are actually pretty simple. And so we're going to teach some fundamentals, but we're also going to teach what's changed in the last few years and what you need to be up to speed on to have a lot of success. And the good news is there are literally thousands, well over 10,000, probably close to 20,000 installations of audio over IP, and I mean studios, that where we have the chance to learn from all this. So, man, the knowledge is out there. A lot of people have stubbed their toes already, figured out what works and what doesn't, and that's what we're going to be imparting to people here. So you can get, if you haven't done an audio over IP studio yet, you can get a running start. And if you haven't done any AES 67 studios, then you can get a running start on those too and not stub your toe like so many other people have. So that's my session on Wednesday afternoon at AES.
That, and we're going to have a special event for modern transmission facilities. So we're going to have John Lyons from World Trade Center. We're going to have Shane O'Donohue from Empire. We're going to have Jim Leifer from American Tower. And we're going to have some others. And it's going to be moderated by Scott Feibisch, because who else knows transmission facilities
than yeah.
Scott? And this session, I am co-producing this with the Society of Broadcast Engineers. So anybody that comes to the building that has a badge, whether it's exhibits only or you paid for the whole thing, can come to this session.
So does it count as an SBE meeting for you?
Well, probably does.
Okay.
By helping organize this, I hope it helps on my recertification.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of, recertification. All right.
And hey, this year I did become a senior member. I don't know if that means that it's just because I'm old or not, but that's besides the point. And after that, get this session. I got Tom Sahara of Turner Broadcast talking about how they do the audio of March Madness.
Ooh, okay.
That's going to be really cool. And I don't know if you've ever sat in any of Tom's sessions in the past. He's an amazing speaker.
I'd be curious to know if they do this with an amazingly few number of microphones or an amazingly large number of microphones. But audio for March Madness is critical. People, fans watching, they want to hear everything.
Okay. And then we have a session. Standardizing the streaming metadata.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Sousa of Triton is putting that together, and he's working with a number of other companies to get this session to really be educational. It's not going to be a sales presentation. As I like to say to everybody, we're discussing technology and technique, no sales presentations. And that's going to be a really interesting session because metadata is so important nowadays.
You know, everybody has their favorite topic, and I've known Sam for some time. In fact, I'm having an interview with him later this week to flesh out some questions about metadata that my employer is working with Sam's employer on. Let's just say it that way. And you know, almost any one of these sessions, if it's your topic, if it's your hot button, you could say, if there's one reason why you come to AES in New York, this is it. And for me, seeing Sam and hearing him talk about standardizing metadata, that's going to be very worthwhile. So I will definitely be in on that. What day was that session? Do you have that?
Well, the days and times are still up in the air. So things are moving around. They might be set for a day today and move tomorrow. Okay. Also, we're going to at the convention, we're going to have the DTV audio group having their usual meetings. So they'll be there. And also, we're going to have a session called Loudness for Over-the-Top Television. And that is incredibly important because, let's face it, over-the-top TV is growing like crazy. Now, then, have you ever met Thomas Lund?
No, heard the name, haven't met him.
He's putting together a session on listener fatigue and auditory stress. Thomas is probably the leading person on that. So I highly, even though you're saying, oh, I don't want to sit in something that's called listener fatigue, it's incredibly important. We have stressed it for a number of years because if you can content is king, and you want to make sure nothing is fatiguing because then you're going to lose your audience.
Well, and for radio people, this is key too. Even if they're talking about television, audible fatigue or listener stress, you know, we in radio need to understand this well too. We don't want people ever tuning away from our station and they don't know why. It was just getting on their nerves. You know, you get to understand this,
right? And after this, we have David Layer and I have put together this session, The Future of Audio Delivery to the Consumer, Both Home and Mobile. We're going to be discussing smart speakers and everything else. It's a whole new world out there that on how audio is being delivered.
I'm just waiting for my comm badge right here, just like Captain Kirk had and just like staff had right there. That's what I want. I want my, you know, she who not shall not be named, my Echo. That's it. The new Amazon Echo pin.
I personally think it's not that far away.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 7 smart speakers in my house right now that I can walk into any part of the house and turn on the lights, the stereo, the TV, the thermostats, and plus listen to any streaming audio source.
I guess before we say, Andorra, beam me up. I guess we got to work on the beaming part first. Right?
I'm just waiting for trouble with tribbles.
There you go. All right. David Layer sessions are always great. So glad you're doing that with David. What's next?
Loudness for streaming. I'm chairing this session, and basically we're going to – loudness on – it annoys me to no end when you're listening to a stream and then they break for commercials and the commercials shoot you through the room. That's injected audio. The loudness has to be standardized. And that's one of my pet peeves, and I've been working on it forever. And we've introduced the recommendations for loudness last year, and the video version has actually been moved towards a standard, and it's very important. I can't say enough about that.
So we should just rename this How to Make Your Programming as Loud as the Commercials or as Annoying as the Commercials. Now, there's a better way to handle it. I'm sure we'll find out about it.
Okay. And then, you know, Howard Price, he's putting together a session called Broadcasting in Emergency Situations. Okay. And he's going to talk about broadcasting through the storms and everything else. And he's got an incredible, incredible panel there. Alex Roman from Emmis is on it. And I can't think of who else is on it at the moment, but it's a great session. Then on Friday night, over at the WNYC New York Public Radio Green Space, I'm producing the 80th anniversary of the Mercury Theater's War of the Worlds.
Okay. tell me about this.
Okay. Frank Beecham, who worked with Orson in his later years, is going to be talking about it, because he actually interviewed Orson and John Houseman about this stuff before they died years ago. We have Herb Squire and Laurie Squire talking about fan impact and also some of the impact of the show. We have Seth Winter and Sammy Jones playing a remastered recording of the original. So they're going to play some excerpts from that. And then we have Sue Zissa and David Shin and Voicescapes doing some recreation and also and taking some liberties here there with some audio production. Production. And it's going to be amazing. And then on Saturday, because I am a very active member of the Society of Broadcast Engineers to this day, we're going to be doing certification exams at the AES. And people should take advantage of this. Go to the SBE website, register for it, because certification is so important. It is the only way that you can quantify your skill to any potential employer. And I can't say enough about certification. I think it's incredibly important. And Herb's and Kirk, since you're on the board, you should say something about certification too.
Yeah, our certification committee is meeting just before the national meeting, and they keep working out better and better questions, better ways to make sure people are certified. And yeah, they're working actually on the notion of, and I don't know when this is going to happen, but they're working on the notion of making certification tests, let's say open book or internet access, because it's not so much anymore about what you can store in your head. It's more about, you know, the fundamentals, you know, the principles, and there may be a data point. Oh, well, what size wire should I use for this? Or, you know, how long of a piece of PC board foil is too long to handle this frequency? You know, this doesn't look right to me. Or do I really need to put a ferrite bead here because of this or that? And so there a lot of work goes into that. I mean, it's easier to come up with questions when it's not open book. So anyway, point there being that SBE is working on this. And yes, indeed, people, we keep proving year after year after year through the SBE salary survey that engineers who are SBE certified make more money than those who are not certified. So it's very worthwhile to get certifications. Go on the SBE website, SBE.org. Look for the education certification area and pick out what's next, what's right for you, what's next in your career. And that's what I've always done. I've gone through about four certifications now. And it's always been good. I'm probably ready for another one.
I've always said you're certifiable.
Yeah. Okay. We'll put links to the session list soon as it's available.
And Kirk.
Yeah.
Just because you're such a hell of a nice guy and everything, I have made it available to you and your listeners that if you go to www.aesshow.com/aes18twert, you can register and get yourself a Exhibits Plus badge.
And our listeners can go to the exhibits for free, and there was a session that they can get into also, right?
They can get into the modern transmission facilities.
Okay, so we'll put this in the show notes. I wrote down AESShow.com/AES18TWERT.
And when you go up to pick up your badge, tell them Kirk sent you.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be impressed. All right, we'll put that in the show notes. I'll tell it to you again right now in case you're listening or driving. It's AESShow.com. That's the usual AES Show website. So AESShow.com/AES18TWERT. And that 18 as in 2018. So /AES18TWIRT. Thank you, David. That's very cool.
Hey, anything for you, Kirk.
Oh, thank you. Hey, I appreciate you so much being here with us and telling us about AES coming up. I'll see you in New York. A list of programs here. I don't know. looks like I know what I'm doing on Wednesday, Thursday, and part of Friday.
And hey, if any of your listeners want to see something and really are on the fence of whether they should come to AES, they should look at some of Kirk's older stuff that's on YouTube. And also, like last year, you did the recording of the World Trade Center, and the year before that, we did the did the session on top of Empire State Building. So we always do stuff that's really amazing. And I know, Kirk, your boss is still taking around the video of the Empire State Building.
Oh, good. That's awesome. We did. We had some great previous tours where we have taken some of the content that you've provided and arranged for, David, and turned them into tour shows. We appreciate that so very much.
Okay.
All right.
And I hope to see you in New York.
I will see you in New York. You take care, okay? That's David Bialik. He's with Entercom, and he's also in charge of the streaming and online delivery content.
Broadcast and online delivery.
I'll get it right eventually. Broadcast and online delivery. BOD.
Right.
Broadcast and online delivery. Way better than BS is BOD.
And we have to see if we can get Chris Tarr to show up this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll bug him.
I've been bugging him already.
Okay. You take care, David. Thanks a lot for being here on this segment of This Week in Radio Tech.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Inovonics family of rebroadcast receivers, designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
That Aaron 655 is pretty amazing. What a receiver and RDS generator, and it'll go right back into your audio processor, or rather right back into your transmitter. You can get the Aaron 655 from our sponsor, Broadcasters General Store. You can find them online at bgs.cc. That's bgs.cc, or call them. I love to call them because they love to talk on the phone. Really friendly and very knowledgeable. Call them at 352-622-7700. Again, that's 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Store. Say hi to Carly or Carrie or Jessica or Jonathan. So many good people there. Thanks a lot, BGS, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, along with Innovonics and the Aaron 655. Okay, real quick, we're going to wrap it up with a couple of quick tips. And Jill Courtney is still with us. Jill, you got a quick tip for us, for our listeners? Oh, you're muted. It always happens. Are you there? Nope, not there. Okay, hang on. You hang on. We'll try to figure it out. Chris Tobin, you're up with your tip.
Tip of the week. Let's see. Something simple. It's a diagnostic time. That Whirlwind speaker box I always talk about? I used it again this week. Audio cables, some microphone setups we have. So I think I'd recommend the little cue box, the built-in speaker, and the ability for you to listen to stuff. It also plays out of tone. So I was actually working on a project for a live setup, and I needed to verify a cable. And I actually fed tone into it and found at the other end where I needed to. So I didn't have to look for cable numbers or hope something was the right color tape and things of that sort. So I think it's still called the cue box. It's a handy little box. I have to tell you, it's not digital. It's not AES. Doesn't do all those crazy things. It's real simple, straightforward analog amplifier with headphones and XLRs in and out.
I would, and I, it wouldn't surprise me if Chris Tobin owns stock in Qbox, but he doesn't. It's totally.
I don't know. These are tools that I use. I work with. There's folks I've worked with on projects that are hell-bent on having to use the latest technology to do something very straightforward, which is their audio on the cable at the other end. Yeah, well, this little box will do that for you. Or you could get the $2,000 crazy digital device that says there's something present or not.
You don't need a spectrum analyzer to see if all three wires are hooked up and wired correctly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, see, did we get... okay. Jill's still not with us yet. Okay. So in case we got to go soon, in case Jill doesn't get with us, remember her best tip of the week is to watch her video on YouTube. And I'll put the link in the show notes because she does a great job of explaining this thing about desiring equity in broadcast education and jobs. I've got two quick tips. My first one was something that David Bialik referenced, and I'll put this in the show notes. You can register for the AES convention for free by using a TWRT code. And if you go to aesshow.com/AES18TWRT, then you get to register for free. You got to put that code in at the very end, and then your cost will be zero for the exhibits. And there is at least one session you can go to with just having an exhibits badge. You don't have to pay for the whole registration. The second tip that I've got, this may or may not be in the show notes. My brother-in-law introduced me to the Ringtone Annoyatron. Now, they have several different models of Annoyatrons. You pull the plastic thing out. And you can set it by pushing the button. Hope you can hear that. It makes different cell phone rings. And if you put the piece of plastic back in, then it'll shut the battery off so you can save the battery. This thing will run for days and days and days in the mode where it just every couple of minutes, it'll put out a ringtone. Why would you have this? Why would you use this? It's just a great practical joke. Yes, it's a great practical joke. The Annoyatron. I think I pay about... Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I think what I do is pull out the tab, toss it into an air conditioning duct, and see how long it takes before somebody gets annoyed. As it reverberates through the building.
I put one in a little vase, a junk vase. One of the C-suite guys at Telos has like this junk vase on his desk, and it's just got junk in it. And when he wasn't there one day, I plopped it down in there. And a few weeks later, I came back and I noticed it wasn't in there anymore. I said, "So, name, was there something in there that bothered you?" I don't know. I was probably in trouble at that point. All right. Did Jill get back yet? Did we get her? Yes. No. Maybe that's a no. Oh no. Okay.
Oh no.
Well,
no, sir.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Suncast. Sorry, Jill. Okay. Glad you're with us though for a solid 25 minutes or almost half an hour. That was great. Oh, peace to you. Thanks so much. All right. We'll put your story, your YouTube story, in the show notes too. All right. We got to go. Thanks to Suncast for his work on such a busy show. I really appreciate all that work. Thanks to, Andrew Zarian for founding this network, the GFQ network. You'll find lots of other cool podcasts, including What the Tech. That's always a good one about Windows technology, what's going on with Windows, and to keep you updated on this, the crazy stuff going on there, as well as all the other great podcasts here. So we will see you next week, okay? Next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.